Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Arthur Keyes of Glacier Valley Farm, South Anchorage Farmers Market, Anchorage Midtown Farmers Market. Any other titles we want to add this morning, Arthur?
I think that's enough for now.
Okay, well, thanks for being here. I appreciate you taking the time. Quick Farmland Trust announcement. Coming up November 3rd, we haven't done a full release of this event yet, but coming up on November 3rd, which is a Sunday afternoon, there's going to be a community celebrate the harvest activity at the Palmer Depot in conjunction with Grow Palmer, Matsu Chapter of the Alaska Farm Bureau, Matsu Experiment Farm, the Matsu Experiment Farm and Extension Center, sorry, Jody, and Alaska Farmland Trust. We're going to be showing a super cool movie called The Biggest Little Farm. It's in a critically acclaimed Sundance Film Festival award-winning show about farming, a movie about farming. Anyways, we're going to show that show. We're going to have some Alaska-grown food. We're going to talk about the Palmer food scene and the future of food production in Alaska. We will release more information about that next week on Facebook and on our website. So stay tuned. It will be a free event, but we are going to be calling on the community to make some donations, and we'll tell you all about that. But mark your calendar Sunday afternoon, November 3rd. I think that's only my only Farmland Trust announcement, except a big thanks to the community for once again supporting Alaska Farmland Trust and the Muskox Farm in our wildly successful Oktoberfest event last Saturday. It was great. Had a little bit of a weather issue, which was exciting, but it was another very successful fundraiser for our two organizations. So thanks to everybody that showed up, supported, sponsored, like you did, Arthur. Thanks so much.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. So let's jump in. I was thinking about all the things I wanted to ask you about on this interview. I'd love to focus on your onion production. We highlighted your onions at Oktoberfest this year. We're receiving so much feedback. I've been eating one of your onions for the past week, not even joking. I've made chicken noodle soup with it. It's been my base for that. I've had it in lots of foods. They're incredible. So I want to talk about your onions. I want to talk about your thoughts about farming. I want to touch on that hot topic of quote unquote climate change and what you experienced as a farmer this summer. And then just the ag scene in general. So does that sound good?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So let's start with Glacier Valley Farms, Yensis onion, these incredible onions that you're producing. We've talked about it on the show before, but in case listeners missed that episode, tell me about this onion and what makes it so special. Why are you growing this onion? Why is it called Yensis? All the things.
So I started growing, experimenting with, let's just jump back. And 2000, I think it was 2009, we had 40 days of rain.
I remember that summer. Yes, it was like 44 or something, right?
It was insane.
It was awful.
Biblical because, 40 days. It wasn't necessarily that we got like inches and inches every day, but it was consistent that it rained every day. And at that point in time, I was growing probably a dozen different varieties of crops, and they were pretty much crops that were dependent on flowers to produce a fruit. So zucchini is a flower that it, in order to have a zucchini produced, the flower's got to open up, it's got to get pollinated, and then your fruit grows from that.
Yep.
And I was also doing an acre of strawberries, the most sweetest, wonderfulest, biggest strawberry you've ever eaten. And they're the same thing. They start out as a flower and they end up as a fruit. And that 40 days was pretty devastating to me because with all this flowers that are needing to be pollinated to produce fruit, the pollen's getting washed off, the bees aren't flying, and my income was probably the worst financially, as a successful farmer, that was the worst financial year for me.
Okay.
And so I started looking for other options.
Yeah.
I still want to grow those flowering crops.
Yeah.
It's created my farm, and I love doing that. But I needed something.
You can't control the weather. You haven't figured out that piece yet.
And so onions, looking at everything, I looked at the onions, and I really liked what I saw. They're not a flower. They're a plant that you know, theoretically, or at the time, I thought, you know, they're not going to be as impacted by the rain. I don't think that's true. I think onions can definitely be impacted by the rain.
What an interesting concept, though. That's what drove you to onions. It's not that you've loved onions all your life and always wanted to produce onions and thought, I can grow the best onion. It was a rain decision.
It was a diversification.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never heard you tell that piece of it before, so I learned something new as well.
Yeah, that was the year that opened my eyes. Okay. It's like, okay, so you're going to be a successful farmer. You diversity's got to be part of the portfolio. You know, the flowering crops are there. They're great, but you've got to have something that backs you up when things go south.
Because no doubt people miss your strawberries.
Yeah, I kind of miss them too.
I mean, I do.
Yeah, it was just, the strawberries were amazing. Yeah. But I actually still grew strawberries as I began this onion project up until the last year I grew strawberries was 2015. And then, But anyway, so onions, started growing them about 9-10 years ago.
Okay.
And the variety that I found, and after looking at what was out there and what people were doing, the variety that I discovered that I liked the best was, it's an heirloom variety that comes from Scotland. You know, it's a wild mushroom from, or wild onion from Scotland.
Okay.
Heirloom variety. And it just so happens that this area of Palmer has got the perfect soils for it, where the soil that I'm farming on is all windblown silt that's blown in off the Kinnick and Matanuska glaciers for the past thousands of years. And it's naturally low in sulfur. And I didn't know this when I first started it, but I knew once I first tried and played around with the onions that they tasted really good. It was later on, the more I got to learning about this. Now, you know, Amy, that every year I leave state and I go to classes. I go to learn, because there's so much. The more I've learned, the more I realize I don't know.
Yep.
And so, and it was a discovery that I made along this journey that sulfur is the reason that you cry when you eat an onion. You know, when onions absorb the sulfur, when you run a knife through an onion, you're releasing that sulfur into the air. It combines with the moisture on your eyeball to form sulfuric acid, and it burns, and that's why you cry.
Lesson number two on Ag Matters Radio this morning. Good job.
That's definitely the synopsis, the short version of why you cry. But I think
in layman's terms,
yeah. And so, anyway, we have got very low sulfur content in our soil here, and so combined.
Is that particular to where you're growing right there in Palmer, or in Alaska in general, we have low sulfur soil.
So it's definitely particular where I'm growing. Okay. We do soil tests every year, and that sulfur. You know, it's always a discussion that I have had to move, because we don't just grow in one spot on the farm. We're constantly moving them around, just for a lot of reasons, good agronomic practices.
Yep.
And so whenever I move them, we pull the soil tests and we look at that sulfur number, and I sit down with the professionals in my life, the people that have a lot more experience than I do, and we talk about the numbers that we're looking at. And but anyway, it's fairly consistent where I'm growing at, that the sulfur numbers are very low. I am 100% confident that within the state of Alaska, you could farm these on a ground that has high sulfur, and you'd have a different onion.
Okay.
The experience would be different.
Okay. So for people who haven't seen your onion before, it's, you know, most people think about an onion and they think about a big, excuse me, dried yellow white onion. You know, they don't see the greens or anything on that onion in the grocery store. Is that what you're growing? Is that what people buy from you when they're at the farmer's market? Or let's talk about that a little bit, because your onion is different.
It is different, yeah. So we initially start selling it at the farmer's market, probably starting in July. And we sell it as a more of a fresh market salad onion, so it's going to be the beginning of a bulb with a nice green top that you could process that top and eat it.
Put it
in salad, put it in soup, cook it, whatever. And then you still have a bulb to work with. As they grow, now the biggest one, I mean, big ones can be over 3 pounds.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a substantial onion by the time the fall comes.
Right.
But as the bulb gets larger, the top becomes less viable.
I mean,
it wears out. It literally just wears out.
Yeah.
And so,
because it's the first thing that comes out of the ground. Yep. It's been there for, what's the growing, the life, the...
We start them, everything I grow, we start from seed. And we started it in March, 1st of March. And then we put it in the field the 1st of May.
Yeah.
And then again, we're able to start the harvest in July.
Yeah.
For the fresh market stuff, for the farmer's markets.
Yeah.
And occasionally grocery stores will sell some to them if we've got extra.
Right.
And then this year we began the harvest with the harvesting machine in the middle of August. And so we filled the barn up. By the time August was over, the barns were full. We
had
tens of thousands of pounds of onions put in the barn.
Yeah. Quick reminder to folks, this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Arthur Keyes of Glacier Valley Farm here in Palmer. We're chatting about your delicious onions. So you pulled them out of the ground. The kind of end of your harvest cleanup was in August. And talk about that. So now you've got this softball size or bigger. Yeah. Softballs are the small ones, right? Onions. And they've got those... They had green tops on them.
Yep, we mowed all that off. Yep. We've got an onion mower that takes those off. It's a vacuum cleaner, basically, with knife blades in it that basically vacuums the tops up and then cuts them off.
You videoed that and put it on your Facebook page, right?
Yep.
If folks are curious, they could go check it out on your – it's a cool video. Yeah.
They're definitely a sweet onion, but when I run that mower and if I mow an acre of onions and I live
– Are you crying?
No, I'm not crying. Yeah, you.
No, yeah. Sorry.
They're very
not right
mild.
Now.
Yeah, they're a very mild onion. But when you mow, 40,000 onions, or 50, or 60, or 70,000 onions, you are definitely concentrating that onion essence of onion. And so I live near my farm near the Glen Highway, and I know people are driving by on the highway and they can smell onions.
Drive by
the day we mow.
Wow.
So, so we mow them, harvest them with the harvester. They go into, we've got bins, they go in the bins, they go in the barn, and then we put fans on them, creating a vacuum in the bins that they're in, pulling the air through, and the drying process.
Okay, I was going to say, what's the point of that? Are you trying to dry them out? Are you trying to get field heat out of them? Are you trying, you're kind of curing them, right?
You're curing them.
Setting them, is that what it's called?
So basically setting the skin. The challenge we have, one of the challenges we have in Alaska is that certainly we have a short season, but when the season ends in Alaska, it just ends abruptly.
Oh my gosh, right?
And so in the lower 48, Colorado, when they harvest onions, they're going to go through and they're going to basically pull them all out of the ground and pile them on the ground.
Right. They sit outside for a couple days.
Yeah. Or a week or until they've cured, until the skin is set up and the air and the sun has dried them out. Then they put them in the barn. And I've visited those onion facilities. I've been to, in my course of my journey, I've been to onion production facilities in Georgia for Vidalia onions. I've been in Canada. I've been in Colorado.
Yeah.
I've kind of made a point to see how they do it. And wherever I've been, they pile them up in bulk, in the big barn.
Yeah.
And here, everything has to go into bins for a variety of reasons. But because that fall is so abrupt, we can't cure them outside. We've got to do it all in the barn.
Right. You're racing the rain, right?
Rain, yeah. And so we're watching the weather. And so we're looking for, we need a good, 3 or 4 or 5 days of dry weather, no rain. And if we see in that fall that there's a rain forecast, we are going to pull them all out of the ground and get them
right.
protected from that rain.
Yeah.
Because the rain is devastating.
Right. So you get them in the bins, you get them in the barn, you put the fans on, and then I was kind of surprised the other day when I came and visited the farm. You don't just have fans going.
Heat.
You have heat on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're forcing the temperature in the room to how hot?
86 degrees is pretty much
where you want to be.
That's where the threshold's at for, dealing with. So in lower 48, you do have some diseases. Actually, they have a lot of diseases.
Lots of diseases, yeah.
And this 86 degrees, because that's all the information that we're getting for onions has to come from someplace else.
Sure.
And 86 degrees is where you pretty much are neutralizing the diseases.
Okay.
And so what they're doing is they want it at 86 degrees for that curing process. And so if they can't get it outside, they're actually going to bring it in the barn and they're going to turn heat on until you hit that 86 degrees to basically stop the fungus and molds.
Okay.
Dry them out and then they will cool them down and prepare for long-term storage.
Okay. 86 degrees is like hot yoga temperature. You could do hot yoga with onions.
In the onion barn. Amy, we've got something. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yoga in the onion room.
Yoga in the barn.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I digress. So we've set the onions, or we they're in the totes. You've gotten them up to 86 degrees. The skin starts to set. They start to dry out. And then what? Where are we now?
So right now we...
Because that was just last week that you were doing that, right?
It was actually. And so we started delivering to, so what happens is they dry out, and then we've got a giant machine that has full of brushes that we run them through, and that brushes off any loose skin, it brushes off any dirt, and by the time they come out of that, they're a clean product.
Yeah.
Now, funny story. We used to sell these as Sweet and Dirties.
You did. Sweet and Dirty onions. I remember those signs.
All of our campaign was Sweet and Dirty, Sweet and Dirty.
Because they were dirty. Onions are grown in the dirt.
They were dirt.
Lo and behold.
Yeah. And so it was this like really cute thing that one of the people working for me came up with. We're really struggling with how dirty they were.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, he goes, these are sweet and dirty. You know, people should take them home and wash them off.
Yeah.
And they'll last longer with the dirt on them. Okay. Interesting trivia. Yeah. If they're dirty, they last a lot longer.
Same as potatoes, right?
Same as potatoes.
Why you don't wash them on the way into the barn. Yep. You wash them on the way out.
That's totally it. So anyway, then about 2 years ago, I built this brushing machine.
Yep.
We run them through, it brushes them, and now we have a really clean, nice product that's very, very competitive with what they would do in the lower 48.
Right.
Except ours would be colossal.
Yes, huge.
Compared to what they're producing in the lower 48. And it's kind of funny, you know, on a typical fresh market product, the larger the size, the more premium the product.
Okay.
The thing, you know, though, is that in the lower 48, they don't produce stuff, whether it's zucchini or onions, that's big like Alaskan product. And so we're having to kind of like break trail where normally it would be just intuitive that this is a larger product, so it's a more valuable product.
Yeah.
Premium, and we're having to, you know, get people to comfortable with the idea that this is a large product. It's not available from lower 48 because, man, they just don't grow that big there.
Yeah.
And in lower 48, the bigger the product that comes out of the field, the more they charge for it.
Yeah.
And we don't charge a premium for our colossal sized onions.
So are you having to educate consumers, you think, or is it the store managers and the guy that you're selling to direct, or is it both? You need
it's
to do
both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's both. So when me personally, when I chop up a 3-pound onion, I cut it in half, I chop the whole thing, and half of it goes in a container in the fridge. It's all chopped up, ready to go. The other half I cook with. And
yeah.
That's a lot of onion to cook with, but when you get used to cooking with a big onion,
right?
I mean, it just makes the food better. The flavor, the smell, everything's better.
Absolutely. So tell people, right now, mid-October, where can people find these delicious Yensis onions?
So we started shipping 2 weeks ago to Cars Safeway. So right now, Cars Safeway is the exclusive vendor for Yensis sweet onions.
Awesome.
Yep. And you can find them in any produce department at a Cars Safeway store.
If you don't see them,
please ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are those Alaska-grown onions? And yours, that's the only one on the market right now. Like if you see an onion with an Alaska-grown sign next to it, it was yours.
Yeah, it's
that's
ours.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That feels good.
It is.
What's the biggest pest? What's the biggest challenge to growing onions in Palmer? Pest, disease, weather, what is it?
So it's not necessarily pest. I one of the things people ask me about a lot is, what do you do about root maggots?
Okay.
And that's, it's a maggot that gets in the soil and then it eats the onion. And I don't have a problem with root maggots. And people are like, well, I don't have a problem. Because here's the thing. Onions do have a lot of diseases and a lot of pests in the lower 48. Believe it or not, they are treated for those pests and diseases down there in ways that probably blow your mind if you knew. We don't have them here. And so because we don't have them here, I don't ever bring sets in. I bring in clean seed every year. And that is the key to this. It's also key to not grow them year after year after year in the same spot.
Right.
It's also key that there's – regardless of how good you do it, you're going to have a bad onion here or there.
Sure.
And some people might be inclined – I know they would be inclined to leave the bad onion in the field. We don't do it. We harvest everything, and then the people that are working for me, we all grab bins and we walk. And any onion that got missed, that fell off the harvester, that is still in the ground, it gets put in a bin, and we clean the field by hand.
Yeah.
There's usually not much there because the harvester does such a good job. But we don't leave it. We don't take it for granted. Get it out of the field, because root maggots really is just it's a fly. Just they're here that
lays
an
egg
to eat on that onion. And what you don't want to do is leave the dead product, the dirty product in the field for the fly to overwinter on.
Sure.
So get it out of there.
Okay.
And then don't bring in sets. Don't bring in your problem. We are a very clean environment here. Don't bring your problem in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Another quick reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit. And in the studio with me this morning is Arthur Keyes of Glacier Valley Farm here in Palmer. We've been talking about your onions. So they're available right now at Car Safeway.
Right now.
You harvested, you said, tens of thousands of pounds.
Yep.
For how long should customers assume that they can get your onions at the grocery store? Is this for the next couple of weeks, for a month? What do you think?
I think the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
It's probably you'd expect to see them.
If I wanted to hoard some of your onions, if I wanted to go to I was thinking about this morning, honestly, because I was making chicken noodle soup. I haven't been feeling good. Your onions make a great base to that soup. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to get more. how could I store them? Like if I went to the store and I bought 50 of your onions, which would last me a very long time, can I store them and make them last? How do I do it?
Not in the fridge. You want to keep them dry. The key to onion storage is dry.
Okay. And warm or cold?
So that's a tricky thing.
Are you hedging?
Yeah. Dry is the big deal.
Okay.
It's more important that they're dry, and they will not be dry in the fridge.
Right.
And that's just not a good environment.
Is light an issue? Like with potatoes, you want them to be dark. Do I want my onions to be dark?
You do not care. The onions do not care. What's going to happen is the warmer it is, the sooner that they're going to sprout. There's absolutely no chemicals on these onions.
Right.
Everything you get from Lower 48 is going to be sprayed with something called sprout nip to keep them from sprouting, telling them that I think it's a hormone. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't speak to it, but they spray with stuff to keep them from sprouting. These have nothing on them. So the big challenge that you'll eventually run into in a month or two, if you've maintained this dry temperature for them, is they're going to throw a little green top out and want to say, hey, I'm ready to grow.
Yeah.
Onions are a biannual crop.
Okay, what does that mean for the layman?
So onions and carrots are both biannual crops. And what that means is you, to produce seed from that crop, you would store it over winter and then replant it. So theoretically, Amy, you could take those onions that you've kept on your counter all winter. When spring comes, replant
Put them in the ground.
And they will produce seed.
Okay.
And you get these big old fat seed bulbs coming out of them, and you'll have tens of thousands of onion seed coming out of them.
Okay.
And so that's what they want to do. They want to produce
seed.
Yeah. And so they're feeling the warmth, and that's what's going to happen. But if I was going to save them, I'd probably have I'd probably put them in a cupboard in my kitchen, down low, you know, out of the way, so they're not going to get wet.
Yep.
And expect them to sprout. And when they do, just cut the sprout off and use the onion.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I encourage folks to check out your onions. They are super tasty. Lots of flavor. They're huge. They are massive. You can get a lot of meals out of one onion. They're good raw. They're good cooked.
Yep.
I'm sensitive to raw onion. I don't know why, but I am. And I'm not as sensitive to your raw onions.
Like, I hear that all the time.
Yeah. I can't eat other raw onion. I taste it all day and my stomach gets upset, but yours are good. So mad props for that. Okay, let's move off of onions. Let's everybody go get your onions, car Safeway, for the next couple of weeks. Look for the signage. If you don't see it, ask, where are the Alaska-grown Yensis onions from Glacier Valley Farm?
Yep.
But just at Car Safeway. Let's talk a little bit about Alaska agriculture in general, and let's talk about the weather. Everybody wants to talk about the weather. Some people want to talk about climate change. Tell me about your experience farming this summer and the extremely hot, dry season that we had. What did that say to you? You know, how did that impact your production? Like, let's just talk about it.
So zucchini is one of the big crops that I grow. And if you've heard me talk much about zucchini, one of the things that I'll say, and I've repeated this many, many times, is that on a nice, hot, dry year with zucchini, if you do everything right, you can get a pound of plant per day.
A pound per plant per day.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So this year I grew 1,100 plants. And with this weather, we were seeing that 1,100 pounds a day. It's significant. It's a big darn deal. Now, back when it rained for 40 days, you're going to get that. It's just not going to happen. So it was a good year. Lots of production. The 90 degree temps for sustained periods of time, that definitely brought challenges. I'm very fortunate here in the Palmer. Actually, I think everyone here in the Palmer area is very fortunate. We essentially live on an ocean of fresh water.
Sure.
It's 80 feet down, and it's as much as you want. Now, we haven't mentioned this, but I was the director of agriculture for 3 years for the state of Alaska. And in that capacity, I had the opportunity to travel all over the state and see the different challenges and the different farming operations that are happening.
Yep.
And I will tell you right now that in the state of Alaska, not every farm's got water.
Right.
Or
access to water. Or
safe water.
That
was interesting to me to find out that there's places that have arsenic and heavy metals in their water.
Right.
They can't just pump it out of the ground.
Yeah, they're going down the road and buying water, pumping water, and bringing it back to their farm. You don't have that problem. That's brilliant.
I don't. We're here in Palmer area, we're in the sea of water. I've got water timers for everything. Everything has got a really nice computer program for length, duration, how often, everything.
Okay.
And then I'm also a huge believer in moisture monitoring. So I put probes. As soon as we plant, I put probes in the ground and, you know, different depths depending on what the crop is. And I am on a regular basis checking those probes to see what's going on.
Yeah.
A moisture meter probe can tell you so much about the plant.
Yeah.
If it's thirsty, if it's got enough And so anyway, those
by the time the plant tells you with its wilting top or something like that, you're too late.
Yeah. It's going to cost you.
So the moisture probe is way ahead with the information.
It's amazing how fast that needle will move.
I bet. Yeah. Especially when it's 90 degrees for 10 days or whatever we had.
Yeah.
Was it a challenge for you, or because you're prepared with water, it was a blessing and you loved the heat? Like, what would you say?
I love the heat. I mean, for the most part, for the plant wise, I love the heat. Personal wise, sitting on top of a tractor with a 90 horsepower diesel engine in front of you and then a hydraulic system behind you, this is surreal. Okay.
Yeah.
To me, a new experience. 90 degrees out, I'm on the tractor, you know, you're not at red line, but you're up in the PTO range, is over 2000 RPM. So there's a lot of heat being generated off the engine. You can feel that heat coming at you. You're using the hydraulics because you've got a tool on the back, and there's heat coming off the hydraulics too. And it's like you got heat cooking you on both sides, and then the sun, it's 90 degrees. And so I started wearing a big hat, covering up as much as I could on my head, creating as big of a shadow.
Yeah.
I was like, that was insane.
Yeah, so too much, a little too much.
Personally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What about the smoke? Did the smoke impact any of the crops that you grow?
I don't think it impacted the crops, but okay. I think you could have an issue with some crops.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. It didn't impact me. From the farmer's market, it impacted the farmer's market.
Sure.
But as far as growing, it did not.
Okay. Very good. Arthur, if a young person called you up on the phone and said, hey, you know, I just got out of college and I want to start farming in Palmer and I'm super stoked and I have access to some land, what would you tell them to grow?
I think there's nothing but opportunity out there, and it would all depend on I'd do like a little mini interview. I'd talk to them. I'd get to know them and figure out what they want to do. You know, honestly, this is a hard industry. It's incredibly difficult. Agriculture is hard. And so I think the one thing you can do to hedge your bet on this is do something you love. So let me tell you, if you love tulips.
Yeah.
Grow tulips. Yeah. If you love,
woolly pigs,
and we know people like that, grow woolly pigs.
Yeah.
Find something you love and do it, because it's going to be hard no matter what. And loving what you do is going to be, I think that's going
to
be the difference.
Key to longevity.
Yeah. Until, you know, it's a hard life.
Yeah.
But it's good and it's rewarding and it's fantastic. But do what you love.
I've had multiple farmers that I've interviewed, you know, that are specialty vegetable producers, talk about how they also grow flowers because they want something beautiful to look at while they're out there doing that backbreaking work, right? But that flower is the helpful thing that, you know, keeps motivating them to come back to the field.
I visited a tulip farm down there in Homer when I was director.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked into the
Alaska Stems.
Yeah, Alaska Stems.
Shout out to Rachel. Yeah.
Yeah. And I walked in there and saw it, and I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is so amazing. It is so amazing. Why aren't these on every table in an Alaskan household?
Yeah.
Just fantastic job. Amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just an example again of what we can do here and unrealized potential.
Absolutely.
And I think a young person coming into it, if they came into this and they said, I really want to farm, I don't know what I love. I would lay out my definition of sustainability. I'd say that has to be your goal. And my definition of sustainability is it must be profitable. It needs to be good for the farmer. It needs to be good for the consumer, good for the environment. And it must be local.
Yeah.
And so that definition right there is something they need to kind of keep their eye on.
Yeah.
And start looking for what the needs are and the opportunities and chase it and pursue it. Find what you love and then grasp onto it and go for it.
Awesome. Arthur, it's been a pleasure learning more about Glacier Valley Farm and your Yensis onions this morning. Thanks for taking the time to be on Ag Matters Radio. I appreciate what you do.
Yeah, Amy, I appreciate what you do. You're doing a fantastic job.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.